My name is Cindy Welch. I'm 54 years old. Today is July 14th, 2018, and I'm speaking with David Amin, who is my father. We are recording this interview in Hopewell, Virginia. Tell me how you came to be in the military.
I received my appointment to the United States Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland in 1946. I completed 1 year at the Virginia Military Institute when that happened, so I left VMI and went to the Naval Academy and was commissioned a midshipman in the United States Navy. I went to the Naval Academy for 4 years, graduated in 1950. During that 4 year period of time, I had two close friends, Earl Halpin and Mort Brett. And I'll tell you a humorous incident that occurred. I like to tell humorous incidents to people because I like to make people laugh, and I enjoy doing that. One humorous incident, we would go on summer cruises to various places in Europe, and we 1 year went to the French Riviera. So we decided we wanted to impress all the pretty young French girls in their bikini bathing suits. So we decided we would go sailing and impress them with our sailing skills. So we went to rent a sailboat. The sailboat owner wanted to know if we were qualified to rent a sailboat. And we said, are we qualified? We are part of the United States Naval Academy in America. Of course we're qualified. So he rented us a sailboat. Well, it was kind of windy that day, and we were sailing at the in the Mediterranean, right off the coast of Nice, which is part of the French Riviera. And I was on handling the tiller. My friend Earl was handling the mainsail. We rented what's known as a knockabout. It consisted of a mainsail and a jib. Well, we were tacking. Tacking is when you're sailing against the wind and you can get your speed going pretty fast, but your boat tends to lean with the wind. And so we were leaning toward the wind and the boat was almost capsizing, tilting over. And I told Earl to let fly the mainsail. If you let fly the mainsail, it dumps all the wind out and the boat rights itself up. Or if you can, come about and go away from the wind by using the tiller to come about. And I said, let fly the mainsail. Earl said, let come about. I said, let fly the mainsail. Earl said, come about. Next thing we knew, we had capsized. And we were towed in. And we were very embarrassed. All the French girls walked away from us because we were considered to be very lubberly. That's a term, Navy term, for people who they don't know anything about the sea, they don't know about the land.
So did the man who rented you the boat,
he fussed at us. I thought you knew how to sail.
So how did you imagine military life before you joined? And how did your perceptions change after serving?
Actually, the military life I experienced with my brothers being military, and I grew up in Hopewell, Virginia, right near a place called, in those days, Camp Lee, which was an Army post. So I understood the military and I knew quite a bit about it. So my expectations by going in the military were the same. The actual experience was the same as I expected. There were no new things occurring to me in the military that I hadn't anticipated.
So did you feel like you had to adapt to military life or you were already prepared for it?
Well, the Naval Academy and VMI prepared me for military life. So I didn't have change.
So I've heard you talk about hazing in the early years of being in school. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, at VMI, you enter your college right, and your first year is your right year, and they do quite a bit of hazing. They make you do push-ups, they make you do run laps, it's all kind of physical activities and mental activities. They make you memorize things. You have to eat square meals in the mess hall, and if you mess up, they'll send you under the table, and you have to eat your meal under the table. So I went through a pretty strenuous rat year at VMI because that was, again, during the war years, 1945, and most of the upperclassmen, particularly the sophomores, who do most of the hazing, were very young, and they took it out. The experiences they had during their rat year, they took it out upon the rats. Well, I no longer complete that, and I go to the Naval Academy, and Naval Academy also has a hazing. So I was a plebe the first year. So everybody claims I was a glutton for punishment because I went through 2 years of hazing.
So do you think that affected your life in any way in terms of how you thought about the military or people in the military?
No, I thought it was good training for young officers, as they told us.
So did you ever get caught breaking any rules, and did you ever get away with something you weren't supposed to do?
Well, I got away. I got caught one time. I was stationed in Germany, and it had snowed the night before, and we were having a full dress review on Saturday morning. And I was the lieutenant in those days in charge of a platoon, the 3rd platoon. And we passed in review, and the wind had blown the snow to form very high drifts. Our commander of the squadron, of which I was a part of, was a major, and he was marching us, and we passed in review in front of the general in the stand in which the general and the top brass were located. And he, as we were marching past that, we were going back to the barracks. We had on our Class A uniforms, dress blues, and he marched us right into a large snowdrift. Well, as a officer in the Air Force, we were taught at the academy, as a matter of fact, that you have a responsibility to obey the order of your commanding officer. In fact, they used a classic case in which an admiral was steaming off the coast of San Diego, and he notified his squadron to execute a corp in right. A corp in right is like a right turn to his squadron. The 3rd squadron commander, the 3rd ship commander, radio back up to the admiral and said, if you do a column right or corpin right at that point, you're going to ground some reefs. And he came back and said, at my command, you will execute. So the 1st squadron, 1st ship did a column right, ran aground. 2nd ship did a column right, ran aground. He kept steering straight forward, did not run aground. He received a letter of commendation for exercising initiative and looking after the welfare of the people aboard his ship, but he also received a letter of reprimand for failing to obey the order of the squadron commander. So I thought about these issues as I was marching. I said, I'm faced with two issues. I have a responsibility for the troops in my platoon, but I have also a responsibility for being the commanding officer of the squadron. I decided that I would err on the side of helping my troops because they had on their dress blues. I didn't want them to ruin all the uniforms going through that snowdrift. So as I approached the snowdrift, I commanded my troop to execute a half left and then pass the snowdrift and then a half right and go beyond the snowdrift and then get back in formation before we received the barracks. That was a Saturday morning. Monday morning, my commanding officer, squadron commander, was an ex-infantry officer, and he believed in obeying orders. He said the command general wanted me to report to him at 0800 that morning. And he said, David, I think you're in trouble. So I reported to my commanding officer, and the commanding officer said, yeah, I wanted to know who that young officer who exercised such initiative in evading the snowdrift after we passed in review, and I want to commend him. So I received a commendation instead of a reprimand.
Were there any other incidents where you were caught doing something against orders?
Well, I sold at the Naval Academy. I wanted to marry my wife, Clara, and I wanted to have money to buy her an engagement ring. We didn't get paid but $21 a month while we were there, so I couldn't afford to buy an engagement ring. But in those days, in the Naval Officer Corps, and also in all the military, officers had calling cards. And when they were called upon the commanding general or whomever else, they would leave their card indicating their rank and their name. And we sold those. We had to buy those. So I decided I would sell it. I was a first classman then. And I would sell it to the plebes, and they would naturally buy it because I was a first classman. So I sold calling cards. I had people, friends of mine in Hopewell, print up these calling cards with the midshipman's name on it. And I sold it, and I made about $800, and I was able to buy the engagement ring for my wife, Clara, with the money. But of course, that was a court-martial offense. But no one would turn me in.
Obviously, you were not caught. So when did you leave the military, and what was that process like?
I was stationed at, I had beautiful assignments in the military. I went to electronics officer school, and I was the top officer, graduate grade-wise, again, because God gifted me of my academic capabilities. So I had my choice of where to go and where to be assigned. Well, that was during the Korean War, and the only two places you could go was Korea and fight in the Korean War or Germany. Well, I had my choice, so I opted to go to Germany. So I went to Germany. I had two children born there, David and Richard, two sons. And I spent 3 years there. Then I came back to the States, and I was sent to the Commander General Staff College, which is a preparation for going off to being a general officer. And I was the number one in my class at Commander General Staff College. So again, I had my choice of assignments. And I wanted to become a lawyer. All my life I wanted to become a lawyer. I couldn't afford it to go to college, to UVA, to law school. So I put in to be assigned. I was stationed in Michigan as a contracting officer. So I put in to be assigned to University of Virginia so I could go to law school. And they assigned me to Virginia, but they didn't send me to University of Virginia. They sent me to Virginia Polytechnic Institute in the ROTC department. So I was sent to the ROTC department. The VPI does not offer law degrees, so I couldn't study law. But I stayed in the ROTC and taught ROTC for 3 years. And then I decided to resign my commission and go back into civilian life and move back to Hopewell, where my family was still located. My mother was located and all my family. And all my brothers and sisters were getting older, and they needed somebody to take care of them. So I resigned my commission, came back to Hopewell, went to work for the Army at Fort Lee and for 20 years.
So how do you think your time in the military affected you?
It affected me in a very positive way. Being a Naval Academy graduate, I was looked upon with respect and honor, and I tried to maintain the expectations of my fellow officers about me, and I used that also in my years at teaching at Fort Lee And as I said, I ended up being the number one civilian at Fort Lee because of that. So that molded my character, it molded my personality, it molded my performance. It made me always want to perform the top of my ability, which I did. So it was a very positive influence upon my career.
So what, if anything, did the military or your time in the military teach you about yourself?
The military taught me that I should maintain high expectations of myself, having graduated from the academy, and that I had the ability to meet those expectations in whatever career I undertook.
So, what phrase or word will never be the same now that you have served? What phrase or word stands out to you from your military service that kind of changed or will never be the same now that you've been in the military? Anything you can think of?
Nothing is impossible.
I've heard you say, too, the phrase, hurry up and wait, that was a big thing that you thought about in different situations because of...
In the military, the common phrase is hurry up and wait. In other words, they never want to be late for anything, so they bring the troops early and they have to sit there and wait for the event to occur. I was always a little bit against that because I felt that wasn't being fair to the troops to make them wait. So I would always try to arrive at an affair at the time that the affair was supposed to begin.
Okay. So what are some habits you developed in the service that you like?
Discipline.
Were there any habits you developed that you dislike?
Being in a position of directing other people. At times I've been told I'm in my Bible study, I'm a benevolent dictator.
So what do you want your children to know about your military service?
That I serve with honor and distinction. I serve my country. I love the men under my command. I did everything to help them.